Sound on radio.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is April 5th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We'll spend the next hour with Doris Southall. She's best known for her nursing career and civic contributions to our community. This morning's presentation is sponsored by Last Frontier Realty, the Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Larson's Jewelers, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, and Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank. Our theme song of Meet a Pioneer, Paul Rosenthal's Alaska Flag Song. Paul Rosenthal on the violin, Doris Stevenson on the piano. Good morning. This is Good Friday right before Easter, and the temperature outside the studios at 11th and Cushman in Fairbanks is zero. Good morning, Doris Southall.
Good morning, Gail.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. You've been so busy, but I'm glad you took the time to spend some time with us this week. You were born on July 1804.
Correct.
Liberty, Pennsylvania. Now, a lot of people that we've talked to, either they came to America in their lifetime or their parents came to this country, and so the roots don't go as far back as your family's does in the United States of America. How far back do you think your family ties go in this country?
As far as I'm knowledgeable of, it's in the 1970s.
The 1700s?
Mm-hmm.
The Revolutionary War times.
I'm trying to trace my ancestors to see which ones were involved in the Revolutionary War, but there's some more information I need before I can clarify that.
So you're not exactly sure who, but we're pretty sure that it does go that far.
That's right.
Yesterday, I, while visiting at your home, was very taken with a letter that I read. Written in, was it 1865, during the Civil War? Tell me about that time and those letters.
Well, it was during the Civil War. My great-grandfather was serving, and I'd like to say that he went for someone else. During the Civil War, if you did not want to go into the service, you could pay someone to take your place. So my great-granddad was one of those men that received a certain amount. I do have the record, I don't have the figures here with me, of how much you received to go to fight the Civil War. And during that time, he and his wife, of course, like all married couples, wrote back and forth to one another. And we're very fortunate, my brother and I, to have the letters that they have written to one another.
I had that in my hand yesterday. Well, it was something. The handwriting was very beautiful.
I think for the little education he had, that he did write some beautiful letters. And his wife was a teacher.
It was fascinating to read him talking about the battles that they were fighting and the fact that he, just among the men out on the field, he talked about them not, he said that the other guys wouldn't shoot if we wouldn't, and it sounded like they didn't really want to be fighting, but
I'm hoping someday to have all those letters compiled and put in a small booklet.
Now, wasn't it about that time that your grandfather or something came back and built the family homestead that you were born in?
Well, he had this home, or we didn't call them homesteads at that time, but he had this farm before he went to the Civil War. And he had a small log cabin house. I don't have a picture of the illustrations or anything in regards to the house. But after he came back, he took part of the money and put it into the farm. The other part he gave to his wife, and she wanted something nice, so she sent to England and purchased a set of tea set. And it's china, and I'm fortunate enough to have a few of the pieces today.
And the other part of the money, they built that large home in Pennsylvania?
That's right, on the same farm. And, Gail, I did show you the pictures yesterday mm-hmm. of the farm house and where I was born.
And your mother was born there, I guess?
Yes, she was.
And you happened to have been born there in 1904.
That's correct.
Pennsylvania, Liberty.
Liberty, Pennsylvania.
Now, how did you know, as we've mentioned earlier, you're best known for your nursing career. When did you first feel that you wanted to be a nurse?
Well, this is rather amusing. When I was supposed to have my tonsils out, and at that time there was no hospital in that community. This was in Owego, New York. Not Oswego, but Owego. And the doctor would come to the home and remove the tonsils. And, of course, all preparations were made beforehand. And I can see the doctor and the nurse coming up the street.
How old were you?
And I didn't want to have...
How old were you?
5 years.
Okay, go ahead.
I did not want to have my tonsils. And I hid. I'd like to backtrack and say that the doctor notified my mother what preparations had to be. So they had taken the small kitchen table up to a bedroom, and that was the operating room table, and that was the operating room. And as I mentioned, when seeing the nurse and doctor approaching the house, I hid, and I can hear the members of the family and others calling, and I did not answer. But they did spy me under the dining room table. And, of course, I was taken to the bedroom, and there is where the operation was performed.
Didn't your father carry you up in there against your will? I mean, your dad carried you upstairs.
Oh, yes. I'm sure I was screaming and crying.
Now, what anesthetic did they give you then?
I think it must have been ether at that time.
But you were unconscious.
Right.
On the kitchen table upstairs.
Right.
Oh. And they removed your tonsils.
Well, you think that was unusual? My grandmother had surgery in that farmhouse that I showed you on a table, probably a kitchen table. And the surgery was performed by a doctor from New York City and assisted by the country physician.
Gosh. You have a special memory about when you woke up from having your tonsils out.
The first thing I remember was my dad taking my arm and showing me something that was on it. And in the meantime, he had gone and bought a bracelet. And I still have the bracelet. It's been worn thin. It's in two pieces. And it had my name on it. And that's the first thing I remember after coming out from the surgery.
Oh, and you still have that from your dad. We'll be back with Doris Southall on Meet a Pioneer after this from our sponsors, Larson's Jewelers and Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank.
20 years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. The new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and First President Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first board of trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble. You're listening to Meet a Pioneer. My guest this morning is Doris Southall. Now, how in the world, Doris, did that story inspire you to want to become a nurse?
Well, I think it was seeing that nurse in her uniform. And she was very kind, and I just thought, well, I'd like to follow her profession.
Is that something?
And I was only 5 years old.
I wonder if that nurse has any idea how inspirational she was for you.
I'm sure she never did.
Uh-huh.
But I did nurse my dolls. I made pepper and water or salt and water. Gave it to them by mouth, and of course it was running all over. But that was my medication to my dolls.
Huh. Now, you were attending high school when you changed your mind about going to high school and went into nursing. What was the story about that?
Well, I always wanted, as I said, be a nurse. And when I was in high school, I was more determined to go into nursing. I think Gail wanted to know how I got to high school. We only lived 4 miles from home, but there was no buses. So it meant you had to walk, ride a bicycle, or ride horseback, or drive a horse, buggy or horse and sleigh. Well, my first was taking the bicycle riding. The second was, my brother and I used to drive. I had one experience where the brother that usually did the driving could not be along. My younger brother went to a school nearby, probably a mile, mile and a half. And this morning I was driving, and the horse shied, and of course jumped, broke the fills. My brother to this day will say, "You didn't care about me. All you said, where's my violin? Where's my violin?" So that's one of my memories of driving to high school. But while in high school, I became more and more interested in nursing, and I was accepted to the Philadelphia General. My mother thought that was the end of the world, and I think it was only about 150 miles away, and she wouldn't hear to that. So I decided to apply for the school of nursing nearby, about 10 miles from our home. And I did. I was accepted. And I'd like to say, at that time, They would accept you on 1 year of high school. I had 2 years. You wonder why we were accepted that time? Due to World War I, there was a shortage of nurses because the nurses that were already trained, many were being taken to the Veterans Hospital to take care of the veterans that were injured during World War I. I had 2 years of high school, and as I said, I was accepted. I was working in a restaurant going to school in this town. My mother did not know until I was ready to go in training, which was 2 weeks before, that I was ready to go. And she tried to persuade me not to, because she really wanted me to follow in her field, a teacher. And I said, Mother, I have everything ready. The uniforms are made, and the school furnished the material. They also furnished the books. And I started in training with $10. I've never been sorry, and my mother wasn't either. As the years went by, I think she's very happy that I'd gone into the nursing field. And she also was happy to know my younger brother followed in her footsteps, and they both were graduates of the same college.
Is that, now that's Mansfield. That was
Mansfield, Pennsylvania. Now, at that time, when Mother graduated, it was called a training school. But when my brother did, it was Mansfield State College. Now it's a university.
Uh-huh. Now, your mother was a teacher and was cited in 1969. In fact, the first woman, was it, to receive a special citation from the university?
That is correct. My mother was the first woman to receive a citation from her school.
And your father, during all these years, was a soft coal miner and worked on the railroad.
That's right. He was, when they were first married, he was working in the mines as soft coal.
Uh-huh.
It was in that part of Pennsylvania where the soft coal mining was. And then when we moved to Owego, New York, he was with the DL&W Railroad, and he was the supervisor of the painting of railroad stations and bridges.
Uh-huh. Now, you graduated from the School of Nursing at Blossburg State Hospital, Blossburg, Pennsylvania, 1927.
That is correct.
You're about 23 years old then. You passed your state board exams to be a registered nurse.
I did.
And then what happened? Where'd you go to work after that?
Well, I worked in my own school, both private and general duty. And then I went to Shenandoah, Pennsylvania. And at that time, it was a new hospital just opening. And they asked for 14 of us to go and help open that hospital in Shenandoah.
Huh.
Now, both of those hospitals are closed now because the state began to close these schools and hospitals.
Once you got into nursing, was it fulfilling to you? Was it a fulfillment of your childhood dreams of being a nurse? Did you like it?
I enjoyed it. My nursing years have been some of my happiest years, because I felt I was doing something for someone else.
Uh-huh.
And I really, when I had a very, very critical patient, it was a thrill to see them recover. And it was a challenge to me. And I really enjoyed that.
In 1929, you went to work as an industrial nurse for a coal mine.
Yeah, that is correct. In Shenandoah, Pennsylvania, it was called the Locust Mountain Coal Company. And that was very, very interesting field.
Now, you were the nurse on duty. Were there any accidents or any stories to tell regarding that time?
Oh, there were many accidents in the mines. It was a very interesting setup. The inside foreman would call the switchboard, and the switchboard would notify me how many people were injured.
What, an explosion or something?
Mostly an explosion or a fall.
Oh, okay.
perhaps some what they called collars in there. In other words, were supports. And if one of them fell and some of the coal started falling in rock, that meant many were injured then. And when they'd notify me, I would immediately know how many ambulance to have. We always notified one or two doctors. We were set up by the time they were brought out of the mines.
You told me something interesting yesterday about what you as nurses and doctors would have to do for the men who were in an explosion. There was something that would get in their skin.
Well, where it was a fire and an explosion, when they were brought to the hospitals, they immediately, mostly that was orderlies and would do, and the nurses, and have them prepared for the doctors, was to scrub the injured area to try and get that coal out.
Of their skin.
Right. If it wasn't taken out, you would notice these people for years, until their death, they carried those little blue spots in their face or arms or wherever.
During those years, what kind of treatment did you give? What did you have available for these people?
Well, regular treatments, but I think the burn treatments are the ones you might be referring to. Our burn treatments was just plain material, similar to outing flannel, white, and all we used was boric acid and sterile Vaseline.
Huh.
And we had very, very few that ever had any ill effects from it. And that was because they would move their mask or the pieces over their ears, and because as the heat of their body penetrated, then that Vaseline would start running, and it would annoy them when it went to their ears. And they'd lift this material away, and several times I know we had some that their ears were not back to normal. They were thick and heavy.
Mm-hmm. And you married in 1929?
Correct.
John Thomas Southall. And he was an engineer for a coal company?
Yes, he was what they call an inside engineer.
Now what happened after your marriage? Your life did change for a while there.
Oh, yes, I became a housewife. I did work for a short time after and became a housewife, and a year later became a mother. And the nursing I did at that time was more or less neighborly to help out.
Now, what was the reason for that? Now, 1929, you're getting into the 30s and the Depression years, and so you retired for a while or left nursing for a while, and yet you stayed involved. Now, what was the reason that was particular to those Depression years?
Well, I think you're referring back to our conversation yesterday, Gail, where I mentioned several doctors came to the house and asked me if I would do treatments in my own place and go to homes and do whatever treatments had to be there, which I did. And the doctors would bring the supplies to the house or to the patient's home. And at that time, penicillin was introduced. And it was fun. You were giving it 24 hours.
Every 2 to 3 hours, you had to give this to patients?
That's right.
Come back and forth to you? Or?
Some did, and some we had to go to the home. And I remember one ammonia case lived about a quarter of a mile from where I did, and it was a terrible wintry evening and day, and I only had a couple steps from the house down to the road. And my husband would get up and shovel the few steps path. The man that was taking me to his wife, he would shovel a couple up. So every 3 hours, they were getting me out to go to her place to give that penicillin.
Sounds like you were kept pretty busy during that time.
I really was, but here again, you were saving a life.
How much did you get paid for that?
At that time, it charged a dollar an hour.
And you probably didn't always collect.
It was in my own neighborhood. It was a very lovely rural area, residential. But they were all friends, and some of them were having difficult problems due to depression. They'd lost everything. So I was glad to even have a dollar per hour.
We're going to take a break to acknowledge our sponsors, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Forget Me Not, and the Riverboat Discovery. We'll be back with Doris Southall on Meet a Pioneer.
Meet a Pioneer. KFAR Radio is proud of this show, and we're proud of our sponsors. Take it from Ag Baba, folks. One of the greatest pleasure trips you'll ever take is a trip up the Chena and Tanana Rivers aboard the Riverboat Discovery. It's scenic, it's fun, it's a little adventure back into Alaska's past, a real riverboating adventure, guided and informed by lifetime pioneer Alaskans, the Binkley family. The Binkleys, three generations of riverboat captains on Alaskan waters, whose knowledge and love of Alaska is unsurpassed. Try the Riverboat Discovery, and when your trip is complete, you'll feel like we do here at KFAR. It's a joy to speak of the Riverboat Discovery, and it's a pleasure to do business with the Binkleys.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linens, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square.
Dr. Carol Davis wishes to take this opportunity to inform her patients and all her new friends from Meet a Pioneer that the offices of Denali Chiropractic Clinic have moved from their former location at 3525 College Road. You're invited to visit Dr. Davis's new offices at 1018 College Road on the east edge of Kramer's Field, or you may call Dr. Carol Davis at 456-5252. That's Denali Chiropractic Clinic, now located at 1018 College Road.
My guest on Meet a Pioneer is Doris Southall. Doris, how many children do you have?
I have one son, and he lives in Pennsylvania.
And that's John Thomas Southall, Jr.?
Right.
Uh-huh.
He and his wife both live there, and they have a very lovely place. I visited them last fall.
Uh-huh. Now, your life, there was a turning point in your life. 1949.
That was when my husband was killed on the highway. And after that, I had to make many adjustments. And I decided to go back into the nursing. And I did. I went into the hospital of Coaldale, Pennsylvania. And I worked there until 1953 when I came to Fairbanks.
Now, how in the world did you happen to come to Fairbanks?
I came on a visit, so I thought. And here I am, 31 years after.
Who are you visiting?
My oldest brother and his wife were living here. They had lived in Skagway before, and before that, White Horse. And they moved up to Fairbanks. In fact, my oldest brother had had a bakery in Skagway, and he wanted to buy the equipment, and the lady did not want to sell just the equipment. She wanted to sell the building. So he decided to come to Fairbanks. And on August 22nd, in 1953, I came here to visit my oldest brother, James and Beth McCarthy, and I came with my mother and my brother, J. Ellsworth McCarthy, and they were both here, and my Mac, better known as Mac, was in the Maine Junior High School, the principal at that time, And my mother substituted.
Huh.
And later on, the sisters found out I was a nurse, and they asked me to help out in private duty over at St. Joe's. And I enjoyed nursing there, and I decided to go back and resign from where I was working in Coaldale, Pennsylvania. So I've been in Fairbanks ever since.
Huh. Now, when you came up here, though, it was just a visit.
And then I did have the pleasure of opening the first cafeteria in Lathrop High School. My brother was the principal at that time and had made arrangements for another lady to take over the cafeteria and be the cook. And they got word the last minute that she could not come. So he asked me if I would take it over, and they'd help me the best they could.
Now, what year was that?
Oh, I'm not quite... Oh, 55.
1955, the first year that Lathrop opened.
That is correct.
Now, you were working at St. Joe's, though, your first year here.
Oh, I worked at St. Joe's off and on from... Well, I worked at St. Joe's off and on from 53 until I went in there at 55.
What was that like working over there? Can you tell me something about the experiences there?
Well, it was very interesting. The doctors were very nice to work with. I worked with Dr. Scheibel, Dr. Haglund, Dr. Rebar, and Dr. Dunlap, and Dr. Lundquist, Dr. Weston at that time. And I really enjoyed working with them, uh-huh. And also the sisters and the other nurses. And
It was a good introduction to people in Fairbanks. You saw a lot of people go through that hospital.
That's right. But I think I was 3 to 6 weeks when this cafeteria first opened. And then I had to go back and close it. There was some... They've had a couple cooks during the year, and there was some problem, I don't know just what, but anyhow, I went back and closed the cafeteria.
Well, how long did you work in the cafeteria at Lathrop High School?
Oh, I'd probably say 6 to 8 weeks all total.
Uh-huh. Now, that was kind of a switch. You'd never been a cook for
a living. I wasn't really interested in doing
it. But your brother needed you. And
well... There was help. They sent some of the students came down and helped set up the counter and help clear the tables and so forth.
Well, what did you do after that then when your services weren't needed?
Back to private duty nursing. And then in 1956, I went into the school district as school nurse.
Huh. For which, what, Maine or Lathrop or...
Well, at that time, some of us had to take two schools. And I had Maine, that was kindergarten through eighth grade, and 2 half-days a week at Denali in the afternoon. And that was the same.
You were the school nurse.
That's correct.
And how many years did you do that?
14 years.
You must know a lot of children.
I think they know me better now because I always had a white head. But they have grown, and some of the young men have beards and mustaches, and I cannot recognize them.
That's true. I called them children, but they're grown up now.
Some of them I had in kindergarten.
Yeah, gee whiz.
Often stop me on the street, and they'll say, "Oh, do you remember me?" And I said, "No. Where did I have you, and what year?" And come to find out, they were just little tots at that time.
Oh, my. Now, in 1956, you were living, I believe, in the Northward building?
Yes.
Tell me about that fire.
Well, I was on my way home from church, and I saw people looking towards the Northward, and then I saw Ralph Bailey running, and I said, "Ralph, what's wrong?" And he said, "They called me, there's a fire in the basement," and I been called here because of the bank. And I went up to my own apartment. I could see the smoke coming up through the vents, and I went down and I asked Stan Davis if I should set up an emergency, and he said, "Oh, I don't think it's necessary." And a few months after he came back, he said, "Yes, I guess you better." So Jack Gourley happened to be there, and I said to Jack, "I wonder if Dr. Ryan would let us have Maine Jr." And he said, "I'm sure he would." So he contacted Dr. Ryan. Dr. Ryan told me to meet him there. And somebody picked me up and took me immediately to the Maine school. And at that time, the cabs were going around and picking up the people and bringing them to Maine. And they had some of the scouts were there in the building to show the people where they should go. And Dr. Ryan said to me, "Doris, what can I do?" And we only had 3 or 4 phones. And he said, "What can I do?" And I said, "Well, call Red Cross because I think they should be knowledgeable of our problem, Salvation Army, and we'll set up for housing where people could go for the night at least." And it was amazing. In a very short time, I'd say a half hour to 3/4, Salvation Army was there with a huge container of hot chocolate, coffee, sandwiches, and cupcakes and cookies. And I said to the one in charge, "How did you do this in such a short time?" And he said, "We just called out our workers and we had an assembly line to get this food." And in a little over 45 minutes to perhaps an hour, we could have housed over 1,000 people. The people called in and said we could take 1, 2, maybe 5 or 6. And some of us did go back in the Northridge that night. They had the smoke cleared out. But a number of people went to private homes or wherever.
But you went back to your apartment that night.
I did.
Boy, you have a cool head in a crisis situation.
Well, I think it was because I always liked emergency nursing.
Uh-huh.
That and operating room was my favorite.
Wow. Well, you've had several opportunities to assist this community in times of crisis. Another one, of course, the 1967 flood. I'll let you tell that story.
Well, I was awakened a little after 7 by our assistant superintendent, Mr. Pressure. And he said, "Doris, I'd like you to go and set up Barnett School and call the other nurses." That was Dolores Schultes and Kay Ferguson. And Dolores was to go to Denali and Kay to Hunter. And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Are you not listening to the radio?" I said, "No, you just wakened me." And then he said, "There's a flood in Enana. They're bringing the people in." And of course, it wasn't too long until they began to arrive at Barnett School. And then I could see that there were many of them that would need underwear and little children that would need diapers and so forth. And I called a couple agencies and they gave me an okay to go to the NC company and get the material and the clothing or whatever I needed. And came back, and then I couldn't even get into Barnett School because the water was starting to come up through the drains, and I had to take another area and walk in through. And later that day, I was to go and stay on a house. In fact, the house belonged to my brother up on 14th, but it was rented. And the lady had called and she said, "Now, if you and Dolores would like to come spend the night here and get a little rest, just feel free to come." Because she said, "I'm alone. My husband's out of town." And we did go later. And as we approached the house, she said, "Oh, I need a flashlight battery." We said, "Fine, we'll go over to Foodland." We got almost to Foodland, all the lights went out in that area. Well, I could see the water coming up Cushman Street at that time. We went back to the house, and we sat there and had a cup of coffee, and then we decided to go to bed because we were both exhausted. And I heard some man rap and ask her if she's all right, and she said yes, and she told who was there with her. And a couple hours after, we heard say, come, get out right away. And, of course, we did. I did not have my car. I'd sold it that year. And Dolores and I went to her car. Mrs. Bailey got in hers, and we seen that both cars were moving away from the building. We started for Lathrop High School, and the water was getting deeper and deeper, and then the big army trucks coming, they were causing big waves. So I said, Dolores, we better turn here and go back, or we're going to be stuck. I said, I cannot swim, and she was looking straight ahead, and she said, well, I can. To this day, it's a joke. I guess I would have drowned, but she was able to swim. Well, we got back, and we parked up on Cushman, on the corner up there, Cushman and Gaffney, and I saw a couple of men talking there, and they seemed to have a radio and talking to people in other areas. So I asked them if they'd notify people that we were there and we were willing to go and help over in Lathrop High School. And, of course, the one that answered was Jack Murphy, and he said, tell them to stand by. We cannot pick them up for at least 1 hour as we're trying to get people out of the island homes. So we sat there waiting. In the meantime, we did not know where our Mrs. Bailey was, the one that we had been at her home. And we tried to locate her, did not find her. So in the meantime, a Jeep came in from the base and left someone off. And I went over and asked him if he would take us to the base. We thought maybe we could help out there, as all the patients from St. Joe's had been moved to the base. So they said, fine, they'd take us to the base. And it was a wild ride. All the debris coming down the road, and made me think of the old-time movies where you'd see them pull to one side and to the other, and that's the way we were, dashing crisscross across the street or road, until we reached the hospital.
In this Jeep. And you were just plowing right through all this water and all this stuff floating?
And trees coming down and branches.
And you got to the hospital at the base?
That's correct. It was on the way to the base hospital.
And that's where they had transported the patients from St. Joe's, and you started assisting there.
So, anyhow, we went in, and they had all the patients were settled. So Dolores and I went over to the nurse's home, and we were there. We had a little pocket radio, and we listened to the weather conditions and how the water was rising. And then she said, I think I hear water running in the basement. And having been out to the nurse's home for meetings with the nurses there, I knew where the switch was to turn the light on. And, of course, I was wearing a brace due to having a broken leg. And she turned the switch on, and she said, oh, the water's pouring in. So she ran over to the hospital to warn them over there what was happening. Several men came over, and they said, waken the nurse. They have lots of supplies and their things stored in the basement. And we did. She took one floor, and I took the other. And I can't recall whether it was Colonel Clark or Colonel Smith at that time. And when I reached toward Doris, she said, Doris Southall, what are you doing here? I said, I'm trying to waken the nurses to go down and bring their supplies out of their lockers. And after things got settled and the nurses got their things up, she suggested that Dolores and I go to bed and have some rest. And I think we both awakened probably around 7 or 8, decided we'd try to get back to Lathrop. And on our way over to the hospital, a Jeep landed. And I asked him if we could have a ride back, and he said, not now, but I'll be back in 10 minutes. So we hitchhiked a ride in the helicopter back to Lathrop.
Is that right?
So it's the first time I've ever hitchhiked a ride in a helicopter.
Now, so then you assisted at Lathrop High School, which had been set up as a
We have 4,000 people there the first day or two. Huh. And, of course, at that time, then Dolores went over to Denali, and she stayed there. And I was in Lathrop 10 days and 10 nights. And we...
In the same uniform.
Pardon?
In the same uniform.
Oh, yes. Go out in the one little room they had connected with the home ec. And that's where I washed some of my clothes. I remember one lady was there washing. She said, "Doris, give me your uniform and I'll wash it for you." So we got along very nicely.
Huh. We're going to take our final break. We'll be back with Doris Southall.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Meet a Pioneer is about Alaskan pioneers and the history of our last frontier. And Last Frontier Realty celebrates the past and its link to our future. You're invited to visit their office at the corner of Airport and Barnett, an original Fairbanks home completely restored, including archival photographs of the interior. On the Last Frontier Realty staff are some of the most effective salespeople in Fairbanks. They employ the most up-to-date marketing plans that work for you. And don't you enjoy their friendly messages on their sign outside? Please stop by and visit Last Frontier Realty, proud of our history and proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. We have just 8 minutes left on Meet a Pioneer with Doris Southall. I would like to tell our listeners, Doris, that you have had several accolades during your career and your time in Fairbanks. 1968, you were the Woman of the Year, acknowledged by the Fairbanks Seroptimist Club. In 1973, you got honorary recognition, the first life membership from Alaska Nurses Association for your contributions to nursing and the people in Alaska. 1976, you received the Distinguished Citizen Award from the Fairbanks JCs. In 1977, you were the Senior Careerist Award recipient, presented by the Golden Heart Business and Professional Women's Club. 1980, citation from the State of Alaska Legislature. Also the Joe Kapler Senior Citizens Hall of Fame Award. 1981, you served as Senator Stevens Senior Citizen Intern. 1982, you received the First Lady Volunteer Award from Bella Hammond. Also life membership in the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. In 1983, you were the Fairbanks Senior Citizen of the Year. And broke ground with Governor Bill Sheffield for the Senior Housing Project. That's wonderful. You're a very busy person. You've been very involved in senior activities and housing. The Golden Towers was one of your projects.
Yes, it was. I can't say that I'm the only one that worked on that, because I feel many, many people were involved. I was the chairperson, in other words, but you have to have these projects. You must have cooperation. And I've had, both with that and the one that's been built in 7th and 8th Avenue, the committee that has worked together, I think that they have been very outstanding and most helpful. And all our time is donated. There's no one paid. Working towards these housing projects. But it's most gratifying after to see how many people are there, how happy they are, and they're enjoying that housing.
You're also involved in a wonderful project, the Alaska Nurses Project.
Well, it's 9 years I've been working on this research, nursing in Alaska. And the first I applied was under the Bicentennial, and I received $500. But I'd like to go back and mention how I became involved. Dr. Beislein came by the desk when I was working there in the university at the Rasmussen Library. And he said, "Doris, is there any material here on nursing?" And I knew why he asked, because they had just lost a very dear friend of theirs, Mrs. Leach, from up at Circle Hot Springs, who had been a nurse. And at that time, I found out that we had just that one little booklet, Nursing in the North. So I made application through the Bicentennial, and I received a $500 grant. And with that money, we collected over 3 cubic feet of nursing material, and it's stored in the archives. The next grant I got from the Historical Society, the state, that was a $3,000 grant. And over the 9 years, we have a tremendous collection. The last two grants, that material has not been cataloged. It will be this summer. And all this material is in the archives, and it's available to anyone. And I'm real happy that our student nurses at the university are using this material, and they feel it's an excellent research, because it covers our early day nursing out in many of the isolated areas, the diseases, the living conditions, and many other problems.
Well, it's wonderful that you've helped pull all this material together, because it would be lost if it weren't pulled together, and with people commenting on it that still remember those times. You're a part of that history. We didn't talk about this, but you did contributed 11 years of free nurse escort service for Native patients to and from villages to the hospital.
Well, I really enjoyed it. There was only one time I was ever afraid, and that was right after we got up in the air. And I had a man that had shot part of his face off, and he had to be aspirated all the way to Anchorage. And at that time, we just got up in the air in a terrific electrical storm. And the pilot said to me, "Doris, I can't help you now, no matter what happens." And it was Mark Stella. And after got the patient there, and I was happy to see the ambulances coming onto the ground to take the patient. And coming back, Mark said, "I will show you where we went through, where I could not help you. It was a twin pass." So I could understand going between those mountains why he could not help me. But I'd like to say that all my years in Alaska and Fairbanks have been happy, and State of Alaska, the University of Alaska, and Fairbanks have been very good to me.
You've been very good to the state of Alaska. You worked at the university for a long time, too.
I was there 8 years.
And what did you do there?
Well, I was at the checkout desk for books that were being taken out.
And you're 80 years old and still on the go. What's the secret? What would you tell us youngsters?
Pardon?
What would you tell us youngsters? What's the secret to all your energy and enthusiasm?
Well, I guess I like to do for others. I've had so many do nice things for me, and I like to pay back in some way. And that's my way of doing, is working with the public. Will continue to contribute their material to the archives here in Fairbanks on the campus, because it's going to be lost history if we do not have this material. And there's many that we have not reached, but we have reached many thousands.
Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
J.F.A.R. Reagan admit will be very hard to sell on Capitol Hill.